Dang it. What was I saying? The human dongle.
Oh, get your finger out of my eye.
Way better now that you've stopped touching it.
Yes, I was...
Oklahoma, where the wind comes sweeping down the plain, and the waving wheat can sure smell sweet when the wind comes right behind the rain.
Wrong podcast. Oh, welcome back to Oakland Said. We are the official Oakland Ed podcast. Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time, you don't have to be an Oklahoman to listen to this podcast. You don't have to be a Californian to listen to this podcast. But thank you for listening.
All you got to do is be an educator or have some sort of interest in education.
Exactly. So most of the people that participate in our conversations are in education, but we've got parents and students that also take part in these discussions. And
school
so,
board members.
Exactly. And so
university professors
in and join us on Sunday nights. And if you can't, or if you, you know, want to do both, we podcast about the Sunday night chats directly thereafter sometime.
This summer it seems to be sometime.
Sometime.
Not so much directly. Now, depending on when you hear this, one of our replays could already be out there in podcast land, but we're going to re-release on Tuesdays all summer until the middle of August when school starts back up. We're going to re-release some of our favorite Okla Said podcasts, so be on the listen.
And if you have a favorite Okla Said podcast, one that you're like, oh, that was awesome, let us know. Maybe we can throw it in, you know, sometime this summer.
You know, I've only scheduled the very first one, and I'm going to keep it secret. But let's just leave it at it's one of my faves of all time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But I won't say anything about who's in it. Josh Flores, Laura Cersei.
Ooh, that was such a good one. That was a fun one.
But I'm not saying anything else. It was recorded at McNally's. It. But that's it. That's, I'm saying all, nothing else.
Don't give any
You'll
more
have
away.
To listen to it. It was
You'll
epic.
Have to listen. Yes, but this week's chat was about, it's actually last week's chat, sorry, was about School Reimagined, and it was hosted by Oklahoma's Kimberly Blodgett.
That's right, and she cheats every time she does a pod, every time she does a chat. Why does she cheat, Aaron?
Because, A, there were 13 separate questions, but each question has like 45 questions in it.
Yeah, cheating.
Or here, read this case study and let me tell you.
That lady, she gives us so much to think on when she moderates a chat. Good Lord.
It's business for us in the talking world because we can talk through it all.
So. Heck yeah, we got time. And in fact, I have seen several references to, I can't wait to hear how Oakley Said sums this one up. So pressure's on.
Excellent. Yeah. All right. Well, question one.
I was going to say questions, but it's actually just one this time.
When you hear reimagining schools, what do you think of? And so immediately I go to, school reformers, right? Like this, because I couldn't remember the word last time.
Yeah.
You know, school reform, and people are like, school reform is so bad, blah, 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 blah. But school reform is just, I mean, when we introduced iPads into schools.
School reform.
When we went from chalkboards to whiteboards.
School reform.
So not the mean, heavy, ugly school reform necessarily, but I really do think that things could be overhauled in my, you know, if I were getting to make the decisions.
If you're a queen for the day.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think sometimes we get all, I mean, even myself, if I'm scrolling through whatever and I see school reform, I'm like dead gum people not having any idea of what they're talking about, trying to take over my schools, blah, 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 blah. But school reform could just be as simple as, how you're teaching your class or how your school organization is set up. It doesn't necessarily always have to tie back to some of these big, nasty test things that people associate school reform with.
Exactly.
And I would say, you know what? We do need to reform school. There's no reason that school should look like it does today. There's no reason. There's too many things out there. We are in a different age than when all of this stuff was set into play. And my God, if I hear this is, we do it this way because we've always done it this way. Ah, burn that page.
Right.
Whew. Okay.
So all right. So are you good there? You're yeah, done. So. You're off here. Okay. Yep. I went with Allison Trimble.
Yep.
Who is at Mrs. Trimble Vicky. She said, I think T's and S's, so teachers and students, allowing imagination to take hold. Students learn in a way that's meaningful to them and are not limited by teachers who won't give them a chance to think outside the box. I loved that answer. I thought it was just perfect because that is as simple as it can be.
Yep. You know, I think that's Mrs. Trimble Vicei, which means that she is a teacher of Cass Nelson, which means she would think like this because that Cass is a forward thinker.
She is.
I went with Shannon Cloud, M-E-D. She is at Senora Cloud. She said, thinking that, quote unquote, re means again. I think it'd be amazing to imagine what schools could look like again if we got to completely start over the education system.
Which is fun. But where would you go, Shannon? Where would you go? Like, what would be the first step? What would be your first step, Scotty?
In redoing the system,
mm-hmm.
I'd get off of the 7-month calendar or whatever that it is that we're on, where we have to start school in August and end school in May.
Yeah.
I would be more of the variety of 6 to 8 week sessions with a couple weeks off in between, and it goes year round.
Okay, so I like that. That would
be the first one.
I would like to get rid of official start times mm-hmm. and let it be a little more fluid.
Yeah. That would be my second one.
Okay. Oh, okay. So kind of in sync there.
Yeah.
All right.
So second question was, now imagine the school you would want to attend if you could go back in time. What does it look like now? How is it different or the same as schools now? And so I guess places where I'm empowered as a learner are places where I want to be.
Okay.
So a lot of the stuff that I've been able to do through all of my grad school has been that way. So I know that... You know, being a first or second or third grader, even some of our high school kids, they do need some guidance. Like, I really need you to do XYZ as a okay. student. But there's just got to be a way to kind of put some of the learning into their hands and trust them to make good decisions. Like, we just don't do that very often with our students.
Yeah. This is seriously a near and dear conversation. I'm pretty darn close to teaching the way I would want to have taught if I'm pretty close to doing here what I would have liked to have had done for me. How's that?
Yeah, got you.
Okay. And so what's that look like for me? And again, not every kid is me. Some people might hate this. I do have a start and end time, but you get to choose when you do English and when you do math and when you do, you know, Spanish or whatever. It your day is constructed by you, so long as by the end of the week, you know, this is the product. And so if you want to do only math today,
right,
so that you can hyper focus on math and just really solidify it, you don't have a bell that rings at the end of an hour or 90 minutes that says time to move on. You can just go until you get it. And so I really like that. Like, I really like that.
I really like that you really like that.
I did choose a Stephanie Hinton quote on this one, and okay. She is at The Steph Hinton. She's also got a podcast. If you've got more time, go check out Passing Notes.
Hey, I know a guy that's going to be on that in a couple of weeks.
Exactly. So lots of crossover here. She said, hands-on authentic learning with inquiry-designed lessons. I've seen schools and classrooms that move towards this direction. And yes, anytime there can be inquiry, I love it. Research-based classrooms where there's so much discussion. You know, it can be different. And there may be things, I don't know, can math be more inquiry driven?
I'm sure that there are ways that we can make math less worksheety.
Thank you. Anyway, so I liked her tweet on that one.
I went with Ms. S, whose kindergarten rocks. She said meaningful.
And she is so crazy awesome. Just so you know, like, met her at Ed Camp OKC. she had on a unicorn shirt. and her hair was purple tipped. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I loved it.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like one of those people you just kind of want to follow around and be in her wake, as it were. Yeah.
I just need a little bit of her glitter to, you know, sprinkle off on me.
That's right. She Go said, ahead. Meaningful work that challenged me instead of worksheets and book reports, although I loved a good shoebox diorama. And I think that's one of the things that is its own conversation is work that's meaningful. Like, here's your worksheet. It needs to be done tonight just so right. you can turn it in and the teacher can check it off. So what's the purpose? Like, is there a purpose to it? If there is, fine.
Well, and I'm just as guilty as the next person. 12 assignments this week to be in her grade book so that she can show that she taught.
Right. And like, I don't get it. And hey, raising my hand, I am a big time breaker of that rule, but I try not to. I try to make sure that anything I give is going to be a good learning experience or whatever for the student.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, question three. Why don't we teach the arts the same way we teach mathematics, with the same level of importance placed on it? And so I was like, because it's not tested. But I think she was flipping that. She wants more of an emphasis on art. I think I originally read that wrong. She wants us to put just as much emphasis into art as we do math. And, you know, sometimes those things go hand in hand.
When I first read this question, I was thinking, I think in a lot of ways we may teach the arts better because they're way more hands-on. They're way more performance.
More free.
They're more free. They're more performance based. Like you are going to perform for an audience and everybody will see if you mess up. If you do a math problem for me and you mess up, I'm the only one that's going to see it.
Maybe your mom.
But I also get the sense that, you know, this social studies, science, English, math, and nothing else matters because that's how our schools were graded for a long time.
Yes.
And we're moving away from that. So I'm hoping that allows our arts to breathe again. But also at the same time, we've had such a massive struggle with budgeting that those are considered extras right now. Librarians are considered extras. We can't afford the
potatoes
extras.
Anymore for painting.
Yeah. So, so there's some stuff that have been byproduct casualties of the way that our system in Oklahoma is funded.
Yeah. Well, I went with Todd Gregg on this one. He is at Mr. Gregg. He says, I try to teach my section of the humanities, history-based, on the skills and through inquiry. So some of us are trying, which I liked.
Right.
Some of us are trying.
And I went with Allison Trimble, who you used earlier at Mrs. Trimble Weissai. She said, as much as we don't want to teach to the test, those several steps above us who hold our jobs in their hands expect us to do so. Assessments put math and reading at the levels I have taught in the driver's seat. Art is the 8-year-old asking, are we there yet? And I think she's right on here. I think too, to a certain extent, we use the tests also as this stick to beat people with, and we're afraid of it. But we can still do amazing things in our classrooms and get outside the box in our classrooms and try new things in our classrooms and still have success on the tests. I did it. I'm living proof that you can do things differently.
You can do it too.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes we just get browbeat by that stuff and we just fall back on, well, principal says. But if you're intentional about how you do things, you can do things differently.
Totally agree there.
So. Question four. What if I told you you had a student in your classroom this year or at your school that thought he, she wasn't good at anything because what he, she is good at isn't valued at your school? So there's the first question. What are your thoughts? There's the second question. Mm-hmm. Are you educating, nourishing the whole child? There's your third question. And or just the brain, just the academics. There's your fourth question. So I call cheater pants on Kimberly Blodgett. but she asked a good question here because all of this is related. And I would argue that unless you can make sure that you have a healthy, nourished child, learning will not occur. Or if learning does occur, it'll be very slow and challenging the whole time. Not that it isn't going to be glorious even when they're nourished and healthy. But being well-nourished and being healthy can make a huge difference.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I put, like, short answer, whole kid. Make that kid, like, my own personal special interest project. But also, I will do a special interest survey at the beginning of each year. And I know I've said this in the past, but it applies here, too. You find out what that kid likes and try to gear assignments towards that kid. And then next week it's towards this kid. And then next week. So you're pulling in these kids' special interests and making it to where they can relate to the assignments personally.
Right.
And then it brings them. I mean, sometimes that's all it takes to get their interest level up, is that it's, you know, about lemonade stands or skateboarding or fishing. You know, sometimes just tying them into your schoolwork or what you assign does tremendous, you know, amounts of good.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's all good. It's good. It's good.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think too, you know, sometimes we're stuck with a value system at our schools that's driven financially and based on school report cards. And so you could have a student who's an amazing artist or an amazing actor or amazing vocalist or your pick of an elective. And that's just the opportunity is not, go back to the previous question, just the opportunity is not there because.
Right.
And that may be through no fault of the school district. I mean, they're looking at specific amounts of numbers, and at some point you have to eliminate things. And it's a sad day, but right now some of those things are what have been eliminated.
Yeah. So I went with Amanda James' tweet on this one, and she says, I disagree with your either or concept. I don't think nourishing the whole child is separate from academics. I think it's included in academics. I think we should allow students to write about their interests, to learn about how to write well, one of two. And then two of two. So she had like a long tweet here. She said, I think we allow students to show mastery of content in many different ways. Screw the test. It's knowledge that I care about.
Boom. And that's an administrator I want to work for.
Exactly.
So I went with Angela Clark Little, who is at Ann Jim Little. And so here we're coming from a mama point of view. And yep. She said, this is a huge issue. I rarely see kids who work hard, hard, respectful of others, but aren't the best at sports or the smartest in their class be recognized. That should change. I'd like to see kids who are kind be the superstars. That would be a game changer. And I think sometimes I love this tweet because it brings up a point. It's, you know, I'm most familiar with high school, right? I spent a lot of time there.
Sure.
And we have these huge signing ceremonies when our athletes sign letters of intent to play college athletics.
Yeah.
Cake. Student body goes down. Parents all say a few words. The coach is there, or some representative of the university. School colors for the college. It's all there. It's the most amazing thing. How often do we do that for our kids that are academic all-staters? Or how often do we do that for our kids who are national merit students that have decided on a college to go to? Or how often do we do that for kids that have picked up through another means, have picked up full ride scholarships or first year scholarships to new colleges? We don't acknowledge that at all.
No.
And we even less acknowledge kids who are just good, upstanding kids.
Right.
That, you know, when you're talking with other teachers, you're like, man, if I ever have kids, I hope they're like that young man or that young woman because, you know, they're courteous and respectful and kind and all those things that we like in other humans.
Right.
But we put so much emphasis on athletics. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying there's so much on it that students that aren't there, they know.
No, they totally know. I mean, and they may get like, we have this many students getting full ride scholarships, and we've got students going to this school, but they're never named by name, you know? And it's usually at the end of the year at some award ceremony where everybody's like, all right, we're all here. We're sitting on the floor of the gym, or, you know, even at graduation where they're sitting on bleachers, or, you know, it's not typically something that's just super praised.
Right. So for all you administrators listening, here's your idea to put into your school year next year, especially at the high school level, and then figure out how it works best for those of you that are in the youngers. Have an assembly every April that recognizes your academic students and make it a school-wide assembly and put those students out on the floor signing their letters of intent to go to college.
I like that. I like that a lot.
Followed by cake, because can't have a signing ceremony without cake.
But who's going to fund all this, Scott?
You know, it doesn't cost any money at all to hold a big signing ceremony because the athletes do it all the time.
All right. Well, question five. Educators understand that students learn in multiple ways, yet curriculum is built for linear transmission. How do you navigate required curriculum to reach individual learners so that it so that no student feels isolated?
Gamification. Oh, that's coming up next week.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get there, Scotty. Hold your horses.
I don't know what that was. That was terrible.
I really love that Annabelle Pacheco has started in our conversations.
Yes.
And I do not believe he is from Oklahoma. So thank you for coming back each week.
I think that's a Texas flag in his handle there.
And if we are pronouncing your name wrong, please let us know. Spell it phonetically to me or something on the Twitters. He says there are thousands of ways to get from point A to point B when navigating through curriculum. However, they all require understanding your students' needs and building relationships to help them get there. So you've got to understand your kid, you've got to form a relationship, and then you've got to work together to get from point A to point B. You can't just, all right, flipping your page or flipping your textbooks to page five because that's the next lesson, and let's do the odd questions. Are the odd questions or the even questions answered in the back of the book?
In my experience, it's usually odds.
Okay, do the even questions, and then we'll.
Always did multiples of three. That way you had one you had to work on your own and one you got an answer to.
I like that.
But the whole... I mean, so what? Uh-huh. Aaron's looking at me as I'm making all these faces and hand gestures. But in math, you know, a lot of times people look at math and they go, there's only one way to do this thing. And you're going to do it exactly how I show you because this is the only way that we can do that. And I call hogwash on that. Like, there are multiple ways to attack a problem. Are there specific steps you're going to have to come to eventually? Yes, in math, there's a lot of black and white in math. But even in math, there's alternative ways to go about solving the problems. And so I know that there are like the five root causes of the Civil War, but there's a variety of ways to explore those, right? I mean, there's not just one way to do that. So I really like what Annabelle said there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who'd you pick? I picked Stephanie Hinton at The Steph Hinton. She said, I say get creative with it. Student knowledge growth development is more important than following the curriculum verbatim.
What?
And I would argue...
How dare you?
Yeah, if you get creative enough, the kids are going to buy into it anyway. And so the learning will occur, and it'll be amazeballs. Question six.
Do it.
Many schools are reimagining school by adding PE three times a day or having classes start at 10 a.m., having less homework, more field trips. What is one way you would like to reimagine your school, and why are we not already doing this? I've seen some stuff anecdotal. I haven't seen researchy research yet. That PE three times a day is a good idea, especially with younger kids.
Maybe whenever I do my doctoral work, it'll be on this. I haven't decided. I offer 2 hours in three different chunks. So we do 30 minutes in the morning, an hour for lunch, and 30 minutes in the afternoon of unconstructed playtime, right?
That's just crazy talk. What? Pounding my hand, they should be sitting in desks in rows all day long.
Well, when they come back in and sit on the couches, they're insanely productive. But
President Trump would not approve.
I've got all kinds of variables happening here because there are couches, and because they do get to self-select. So I will have to find a way to narrow it all the way down to PE or, you know, whatever it is we decide whatever I want to research. But I am pretty stinking passionate about kids getting time to play and it not being super constructed, you know? Right. So
first,
I know in
first
PE,
this play, then this play, then this play. None of that.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, in PE, there are standards that those teachers have to do. Mm-hmm. You know, so I totally get PE, But, you know, the unconstructed playtime has completely led to my students are done faster with their schoolwork, which mm-hmm. is not what you would think. You would think right. putting more time into school would get them, but their brains don't wander as much because when it's on task time here, it is on task time. There, you don't play.
Right.
There is, you know, there's no tolerance for play. But when it's playtime, we are all having a ball, you know, having right. a ball. So, yeah. They really do work hard for me and for that playtime.
I think there's something there with the playtime, and I haven't read the article, but I've seen headlines on social media about in Finland, I think, for every 45 or hour of class time, they have 15 minutes of unstructured, basically recess, outdoor time, playtime, whatever.
I like it. Well, I heard there was a school in Texas doing it as well.
Yeah, and I'd seen that one too. So I just think there's something to that for all the students, not just the younger ones. I mean, gosh, I don't even like to sit in front of my own computer for an hour without some sort of movement or mind wandering opportunity every, you know, 45 minutes or whatever. I mean, it's just important.
Right.
So I went with Melinda Parks here. She's at McCap Sparks. She said a more flexible school schedule would be amazing. Kids who want to start early and get out early can, or we can accommodate the kid who isn't a morning person. At least part of the issue is transportation. You'd be running buses constantly. And I think she's got a point there. But right. I also know that there are some high school kids who do not want to roll out of bed until noon. And why can't we accommodate them in some fashion? I mean, maybe noon's a bit, you know, but I've said for a long time we should have that school doors open at 6 because you got some kids that want to be there at 6 and then
don't close it until 7.
Yeah, 7 or 8. I mean, I know that there's some hurdles there, but what if?
What if? Wow, we didn't even go who we wanted to talk about. I picked Jack Reed here. He is at JL Reed 2011 on the Twitters. He says, I'm changing the schedule to have more options for our students, including a period dedicated in the day for enrichment remediation, exploring certificate programs to give opportunities to our students. They need it and deserve it. Bang. I like that. I mean, just trying, being flexible, trying new things. I mean, it may fail, Jack, but I'm giving you kudos for thinking that you can do it your way or some way.
And if it fails, you'll be able to go, all right, this organization of it didn't work, so we can try again and do something different.
Exactly.
I mean, you're going to have some successes in there so that you'll have an opportunity to get it all sorted out. Love it.
Yeah. And you went with Melinda Parks.
Yeah, and I just read hers. I don't know. Are you paying attention?
No. Okay.
I read mine first. So okay. question seven for you.
A principal from Massachusetts said, it's all about movement all the time at his school. Punctuation matters. Okay. At his school, it's all about movement all the time. 40 minutes in the morning, 25 minutes midday, 1 hour at the end of the day, PE class. Says it helps with cognitive benefits and curbs obesity. Do you agree? Disagree? How can we make this happen? Questions, many questions in that question.
Kimber.
I agree-ish, as long as, again, PE standards are PE standards.
Right.
I don't know that you, I wouldn't necessarily want to mix play with standards. There's no ability for creativity, or I could be completely wrong. That is one thing I don't teach is PE. So if I'm wrong, PE teachers, hit me up on the Twitters or email me. Something about that free time. My goodness, these students are creative if you give them the time to be.
So like keep the play time holy. Like let play, be unstructured, kids just going and having a good time.
Yeah, but I'm just now breaking out in holy, holy, holy in my head because you were just saying holy.
That's a
holy, holy, holy. Okay.
And for those of you outside the Bible Belt, that's a good old-fashioned hymn right there. That's what you just heard. So who did you pick, Erin?
I picked Annabelle again.
Yeah.
He says, I agree with the principle. There's nothing wrong with keeping kids active and engaged, especially at the time, especially at a time when they have so many outside distractions and activities that take away from physical activity. Man alive, I got my daughter a cell phone. Physical activity has, I mean, I've had to curb cell phone time. Like, all right, you know, it's time to put it on the counter and go outside and play. Mm-hmm. Because he is right. There are things that are distracting them from activities now. So I agree with you.
We try and make our kids in our house, like, if you want cell phone time, you have to earn it through some sort of something. And every minute of something else you do gets you a minute of screen.
I like that. I usually make them do something, but then I'm like, okay, you're free to sit on the couch and do your thing now. But the thing lasts way longer. So I need to, I think I need to switch to your give and take, scenario maybe.
So Shanna Malou, yes. She is LS Mellet. She said, this summer I'm working on making my curriculum digital so that I have a flipped classroom. Bam. Therefore, I added the bam. Therefore, my students will come into my class ready to do the activities. They will be up and moving around stations, and we may even go outside. So I'm really excited about that. And I expect lots of sharing about how that goes.
I like it.
So I hope her students come into class ready to do the activities. My experience was some of those ding-dongs that don't do homework still don't do homework. God bless them all.
And but so what do you do with that? Give her a little piece of advice. So what do you do?
What I did with that was I had basically hijacked the iPad cart. And I told my students that I needed 18 minutes of their day outside of class. And so if we have a required activity inside of class, they had to figure out how to get the 18 minutes done around that. So I'm sure she can make it work. She's a pretty good teacher by all accounts. So
you should tag her separately, letting her know that there's advice for her within this episode.
I had shared.
With, oh, did you?
Good. Yeah, I shared with her during the thing. But okay, there's ways around that too. But, you know, like I'm a flipped class evangelist, but it's not a silver bullet. I mean, ding dong kids is ding dong kids is ding dong kids.
But, true that.
But you can work with them.
Yep.
So that's what I liked. All right. Question 8. A principal from Virginia said, at his school, classes start at 10 a.m. and only go 3 times a week. One day a week is field days, and one day a week is interning days. This is a private school, but the idea is the same. What are your thoughts on less time at school, more in the field?
Ooh, scared. I am a little scared. Who manages the field? How do you know they get there? What ages are these kids? There. I just have several questions about this many questions. and I'm pretty sure Todd Gregg said something like, and I didn't pick his tweet, but something like, I'm just not sure about free labor. And mm-hmm. sometimes interning is free labor.
Right.
As long as it's not a free labor and they're actually learning and getting to be a part of, you know, stuff, I like interning. But I if have questions about that question.
Right, good and productive interning.
Yeah. I did, however, choose Jason Bings, and he is at Jason Bings on the Bings.
Hashtag CPS Reds.
Thank you. On the Twitter, Jason hit me up. I'm asking lots of people to hit me up this week. He said, seat time is a sacred cow that may need tipped. And I liked that because it kind of brought back an old conversation, but it does. Need tipped.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe how we define seat time.
I don't know if my school is the only one in Oklahoma, but I do know we are not a seat-based time school at Epic. We're mastery-based. And so, like you were saying earlier, some of my kids, they may need June and July and August to finish that school year.
Right.
But some kids are done in, like, April.
Right.
And you are enriching and helping them along. If they're in high school, they're allowed to even add an elective class to the end of that to kind of
like round out the year.
Yeah, and get you know an extra elective in. So, but I do agree totally, Jason. It's a sacred cow that may need to be tipped over.
I'm curious also on how this looks over time. You know, how can you place, how, you know, is this a bigger school, smaller school? How are you placing students? Right. I like the field day idea, but what does that look like? I mean, are they donating time someplace, or, you know, like a project that the school is taking on where they're helping the community in some way? So I like how some of that goes, but I also think not necessarily that they need to be seated in a, but how is learning being accounted for in all of that?
Exactly.
And it could be, like, it may be accounted for and all there. I mean, I just don't know. So
the elementary teacher in me heard field day and directly went to, like, the track and field where they...
like the end of the school year field
day. Yeah, field days.
Yeah. Anyway. So I went with our good friend, Dr. John Bennett, emeritus professor at UConn. And he said, the only reason I've not suggested it is that politicians and policy people would likely have a field day. Ha ha. He said, I've often thought about bringing homeschooling into schools, and these ideas fall into my thinking. And I think he's got something there. I mean, there's something about homeschooling. Like, when you do that, you're meeting a need that you see is not met by your public school. So what need is that that's not being met? And how can a public school then maybe meet that need? Right. And I'm not trying to say that people that homeschool are right or wrong or otherwise. I'm just saying there's a reason they're choosing to do that.
Exactly.
So.
Well, question 9.
Yep.
A Denver principal of a charter school says, in addition to regular academic classes, 90 minutes a day are devoted to real-world applications of learning, students venturing out of the classroom or experts visiting the classroom. How do you help your students have real world experiences?
I think that's a great idea.
I do too.
Yeah. So I think there's just ways to make connections, you know, through Mystery Skypes or Google Hangouts or whatever. Our technology we have available today makes it easier than ever to make worldwide connections.
Exactly. Tara Linney on the Twitter, she is at Tara Linney. She is amazing. At Donnelly Jamie is another amazing, globally connected person who is insanely involved. And so hit either of those people up. Tell them Aaron Barnes sent you if you are interested in connecting globally through Mystery Skype or anything else. Anyway, I went with our Kim Blodgett.
Shameless plug.
What?
For you. What? No. Hit me up. These are the people.
Oh, right. Well, just say, you know, Aaron Barnes told me to get a hold of you. Not that, like, I'm getting anything out of it. I just know that they are very passionate about global education.
Yeah.
Kim Blodgett says, it's up to us as teachers to hone in on their talents and skills and allow opportunities for them to shine in the classroom and beyond. If they never have the opportunity, that's on us. We need to allow them to win. Each of them have skills. Notice those talents. That's all.
Yeah, that's good. That's
all. Notice.
I went with Ms. S. Kindergarten Rocks. She said, I have a fab circle of friends and community partners that I love to introduce to my students. Also, virtual trips and Skype sessions.
Yep.
You know, bam. Whew, are we to the end yet? Nope.
No.
Question 10. going strong. So, how do we move past the serious issues that public schools face to even be able to consider reimagining our schools? What are the barriers what are the barriers at your district, and where can we start to make changes? And I think some of the serious issues that we face in public schools, a lot of it comes from policy created by non-educators. And I think, I don't have a false belief in that. I think a lot of that policy has good intention.
Sure.
But it comes out terrible, and then there's all these other unintended consequences that occur, and it places a lot of shackles on things where we could have some freedoms. Having said that,
yep.
When you look around Oklahoma and you go, we have failing schools. Well, no, we don't. Our schools are doing so much better. I mean, they're punching above their weight with what they've been tasked to do and how they've been treated. So I have a hard time saying that our public education is failing necessarily. But I think if we could get some state policy level changes that could occur, I think that could go a long way.
So Sherry Gately says, we can start by recognizing that schools were never designed to be equitable.
Ouch.
I know. And so I picked that because of the little bit of the prick that it gives. They were designed to sort students. Now we are expecting to create equity in a system that was never designed that way. If we begin there, then a redesign doesn't sound so scary. Mm-hmm. And so she starts out, and if you had stopped at the first sentence, you're like, oh, whoa, yeah. Fighting words. But then she's like, she's totally right.
Right.
She's totally right, you know? And so we've got to change this.
Right. I mean, if you look at how schools are funded in Oklahoma, they're funded by local communities, and not all local communities were established equitably.
Exactly.
I mean, certain persons of certain socioeconomic statuses or perhaps color were shuffled into certain areas, and that has an impact. So Kenneth Ward said, and he is at Kenneth D. Ward, he said, we have to shift all stakeholders' paradigms. There are many people that work in our schools and many on the outside that have a hard time with different. Maybe starts with courageous, effective leaders. And that falls into the whole we've always done it this way point of view.
Exactly.
Which is also what Sherry's talking about.
Okay, so now there's a question 11 here.
Wow.
So, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, question 11. 11. What are some ways you can reimagine your students' learning spaces? Classroom, library, cafe, gym, etc. Consider seating options, natural lighting, etc. And so, again, there's a lot to talk about here, right?
These but questions.
I know.
So juicy.
So I put open spaces and quiet soundproof booths. One of my favorite places, so I love wide open spaces that just kind of give me a little bit of freedom.
Yeah.
But sometimes there can be a distracting foot tapper. And so one of my favorite places to go whenever I was a kid was the Bartlesville Public Library. They had these soundproof booths, and there were like 12 of them on the wall. And I mean, you had to either wait in line or sign up to get one. But you could go into that soundproof booth and just get stuff done. I love the idea of giant whiteboard walls where you can just kind of connect things and figure it out. Couches and large tables. Cafes where they can eat and drink when thirsty or hungry versus, whoa, all right, we're going to lunch at 12:15 regardless of when you ate breakfast or, you know, whatever. And then natural lighting, in all caps, natural lighting, please. I need natural lighting. That's my redesigned school.
Wow.
If I get to redesign it. Too much?
Nope. That's awesome. There's I just think that we can, in any steps that we can take to get away from the quote unquote traditional looking classroom. So, yeah. You know, I had some kids that, or some teachers that, my children had who went with flexible seating, and I've talked with people who've gone to flexible seating that have loved that. And just starting with something simple like that has made huge differences.
One teacher just put those little rubber band strips on her chair.
Yeah.
And that made a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it crazy? So I don't know. I think anything that we can do that can slowly move us out of these rows and columns shift that some of our schools still are sitting in.
Yeah. No, totally agree.
Who'd you pick?
I picked Deborah Thorenson, but I don't think I picked the right tweet because I picked this one today, and I think I picked it for your conversation and not hers.
So moving on. I went with Mrs. Trimble Visai, Allison Trimble, and she said, I'm constantly looking at this. I do flex seating, adding couches this year. Last year, for about the last 6 weeks, our lights were off and blinds were open. This year, I'm adding white Christmas lights so we don't have to turn on lights on cloudy days.
Oh, man, I want to sit in your room.
I had the festive winter holiday lights going there, and you would have loved my classroom.
You did that in your office this year as well.
Yeah, but the office is just, it's not like the candle next to the blazing sun that was the classroom. Question 12, we're still going because Kim has a lot of questions.
Kim doesn't follow rules.
There's
a written rule, but there. Go ahead.
A school in Philly has introduced a calming room where students can go to recharge. The room has yoga mats, drawing, brain breaks, etc. Is this something you could introduce at your school? Would you be supported?
So I think, yeah, I could, but with my 2 hours of playtime, I don't know that it's necessary here in my classroom, you know? Mm-hmm. But if I were in a place that I wasn't allowed 2 hours of playtime, I would totally support something like this.
Yeah. I think if there's a way to build it, and Sherry hits it here, because again, talking with what I'm familiar with, I would love this, but I think it would take a totally reconstructed day at the high school level, restructured day at the high school level. Teachers would freak out if a student missed part of their 50-minute class. And I think she's onto something.
True. Sure. Well,
we can have a calming room, but we got to figure out a way to use it appropriately, because sometimes high school kids don't need a calming room. They need an excuse to not go to class, and that's why they would be in the calming room. So
Exactly.
You know, trying to sort all of that out.
So one thing I did a few years back at a different school was we did 5-minute yoga breaks when we came in from lunch before I would start reading, so that there was less fidgeting. If things got anxious, we would, you know, strike a pose, and that seemed, the kids seemed to like it quite a bit. So maybe even just introducing it into your own room in small doses could help calm.
Small doses. All right.
I went with Shanna Malo on this one, and she says, students need places to think, to create, to collaborate. They need to move around. It's not just sit. I think how cool would it be if schools had collaboration rooms or reading rooms like I've seen around the OU campus?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
There you go.
I'm down for that as well.
Bring it.
Question 13, and this is the final question. This is the final question.
Final answer?
Yes. no, because we still have boom sauce. It's important for educators to use multisensory methods for things such as math facts, spelling words, etc. Some ideas I have are jump rope, bouncing balls, painting. What are some ideas you can share? So Miss Kindergarten rocks. She says, we all sign. And that's ASL, our sight words. Use goldfish for math, squishy bag for spelling. I have an entire Pinterest account dedicated to find ways to teach the things.
She should like maybe that. Share that Pinterest board right? on the Okla Eds.
Yeah, or we can hook it up in Okla Set as well. That's a mm-hmm. great idea. Share it.
Please do. Christopher Vian, did he ever say? When you talked with him, he's our gifted and talented chat person.
I know. Dang it. I did ask him, and he told me.
Okay. So he is at CVian87. He said, Reader's Theater for students who are comfortable. Let them move about when reading, and let them listen to music with headphones.
Yes.
Yeah.
He did say he answers to Chris or Christopher.
Yes, he did. I remember that.
Okay. Boom sauce.
Yeah.
And I think this is a little ridiculous. We do not love you that much, okay? Just
maybe it's because he's
get to your head. Yeah. Okay.
You have a way with words, Mr. Flores. So you, lucky you, get the honor of being the first double boom sauced.
First double boom sauce. Over a year it took to get a first double boom sauce, and they are not the same quote.
They are not. They are two different tweets. So you first.
Mine was for question 6. He says, and so that was one way you could reimagine school. Teachers have certifications in 2 subject areas. To be fair, I can't take credit for this idea. I heard it from @Levi_Levi_ and or @TiffanyNeal. So both of those people are at the State Department. He said, I thought it was awesome. For the record, I'd choose ELA and science certifications. I loved this. I mean, what a better way to merge subjects, mm-hmm. right? I mm-hmm. mean, if you've got a certification in 2 areas, which, again, who does any of this? You know, I don't know. But I loved that idea.
Yeah,
that was boom sauceable.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So the other one goes with question 12, which was school in Philly has introduced a calming room. Students can recharge, yoga mats, drawing, brain breaks, all that. And so Josh's response to that was, that should just be called a classroom, except the yoga mats. So that guy and his words are very good.
Words.
So there you go. The old double boom saucer from Josh Flores. M-E-D and bro.
And trophy.
And husband. I think now he's just a trophy husband. So yeah, at Mr. Josh Flores on the Twitter. So there you go. That's this week's School Reimagined.
Yep. If you chat. Want to join into the Twitter chat, you're going to do that at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time any Sunday night. Be there or just catch up on Okla Said.
Word to the diggity.
All right.
Oh, the next week. Next week on the...
You!
Yeah, next week is me. So I don't know when we're going to record it because we're a little behind. But
like an hour from now?
Yeah, I don't know. Getting ready to get in the car for an hour.
Yeah, so you are hosting a chat on gamification. That's pretty cool.
That's right. And, you know, now that the old PhD's been put to bed, I'm getting back into what I really wanted to research when I got there. So yeah, gamification. I think there's some really cool things that you can do in gamification. And even though the chat has already happened, you can go back and review that chat. And I just hope to present some ideas to you that maybe you hadn't considered. Because you don't have to be a video game player to use gaming techniques in your classroom. You just need to be able to play card games or board games or something like that.
All right.
So there you go.
There you go.
So there's your chat.
All right.
All right. Again.
All right, educators, you know what to do.
Go out and dominate your summer like it has never been dominated before.
Work on that tan. Oh, my word. I don't know about this. No, it'll be fine. It will be.
Who does that lady think she's got tattoos on her arms and she's going to be a principal for our children's?
I got to go back in time.
I put Easter eggs in there.
Because it blew by me last night. It really did.
They're only saying you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, okay.